Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, happy to say that that issue with the 9am news was outside of KFM. It was to do with the news, the network news service as it comes to us nationally, and that problem has now been resolved, and of course we'll be providing our own news service right throughout the day as well. So on that happy note, also a couple of messages coming in. Could I wish Kieran Cooper, good neighbour Kieran, happy birthday today, 27th birthday. Right, all our love for Mam, Dad and Lurkin, according to that particular one anyway. And morning, Clem, in relation to banks closing, is it not caused by all this online banking, says Bill? Well, that's a contributing factor, say the banks. I feel it's as equally as much to do with, you know, maximising profits as well. Shannon asks, what about all the single people who are mad for a ration of passion and need nightclubs to open so they can meet people? I know. We'll see what we can do about the ration of passion, Shannon, in a couple of minutes' time. Morning, just wondering, can anyone find out how much was put aside in the budget for politicians' salaries? Could that be got under the Freedom of Information Act? And finally, for the minute, Breda, I'm vaccinated. A young girl I work with who was pregnant earlier on this year, she was going to get vaccinated. I won't go any further with that message, Breda, just in case it might point the finger at anyone. Now, speaking of the pandemic, by the way, we know things are up and down, swings and roundabouts in the pandemic. We're getting out of it. No, we're not getting out of it. It's getting better. No, it's not getting better. Well, the good news is, as you know, we have one of the highest vaccination rates in Europe. Nearly 92% of the population now are fully vaccinated. But the bad news we know is what's been happening in the last couple of days, which has all led now to speculation and public thinking and utterances as to whether we will have the long-promised full reopening of society next Friday. So let's find out, how serious are current infection rates? Professor Liam Fanning has contributed to this programme previously. He's Professor of Immunovirology at University College Cork. Good morning again, Liam.
Good morning again, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So how serious are these current infection rates, Liam? 2 days ago, 2,066 cases. Not far off that in the last 24 hours as well.
I suppose it very much depends on your vaccination status, really. You know, so if you're unvaccinated, you're very much at risk of acquiring this infection. If you meet somebody who has this infection, you're very much, you know, depending on your age, you know, if you're certainly over 65, you're very much at risk of ending up in hospital. And if you pick up this infection, you can quite readily transmit it on, pass it on to another individual in your household. In particular, is very infectious within that environment. And even, you know, in other close quarters, it's actually a very transmissible virus. If you're vaccinated, you know, these vaccines are giving very good protection against hospitalization and serious outcome. And those individuals who are ending up in hospital and who are vaccinated probably have other comorbidities which compromises their capacity to handle this infection.
All right. Now, we had 1,627 cases yesterday, 415 people with the virus in hospital. The patients in intensive care is now at 70. The overall number of COVID outbreaks reduced in the week to last Saturday. There were 170 outbreaks. An outbreak, by the way, is two or more linked cases. 174 outbreaks last week, compared with 203 the previous week. So while outbreaks are falling, the actual numbers of people being infected is going up. 19 workplace outbreaks led to 88 confirmed cases. 13 nursing home outbreaks led to 123 confirmed linked places. There were 10 outbreaks in acute hospitals, 37 cases resulting from that. 3 school outbreaks were reported with 15 confirmed linked cases. 2 of the outbreaks in primary schools, 1 at a special educational school. Those are some of the stats behind it in terms of that. But the HSE also reporting that last week the highest numbers of infections were among those aged between 19 and 44 years of age. I suppose, Liam, the big question at the moment is that much has been made that 90% of the population is now fully vaccinated. 330,000 are not fully vaccinated or not vaccinated at all. Yeah. Would you be of a view that we should adopt the measure in other countries in an attempt to encourage these people to get vaccinated, particularly if they're working in any aspect of dealing with the public, that vaccination be compulsory, either get jabbed or lose the job?
Well, the blunt answer is that individuals who are taking care of the vulnerable need to be vaccinated. And if in order to achieve that, we need to make an element of that mandatory, well then, yes, I would be in favour of that. Because, you know, they're healthy enough, they're going to get this infection, but if they're taking care of the of other people who are slightly compromised or even quite greatly compromised, you know, they have a duty of care to themselves and that individual they're taking care of. So I would strongly support the making of COVID-19 vaccination mandatory in certain work situations. The figures that you called out there, Clem, regard to the reducing number of outbreaks and the increasing numbers probably is still reflective of the fact that, you know, we are socialising more, and that's just the nature of this infection amongst the unvaccinated largely. Like, this is largely an infection that's going to be perpetuated within Irish society by the unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there was some talk about the 22nd of getting rid of the vaccine passport, as it's called. I think maybe more needs to be made of that, and, you know, that the unvaccinated really cannot engage in society from a social perspective.
And isn't that the point, Liam, on that very point I was making during the newspaper review? Why should the entire hospitality industry, and by extension, their clients in the hundreds of thousands who have been fully vaccinated, why should they be deprived of either the business or the facility to use any of these services in hospitality or events because of the decision taken by a minority?
They shouldn't, is the blunt answer to that. Let's not sugarcoat it. The unvaccinated are enjoying freedoms because 92% of the adult population have been vaccinated. So there's an element of self-centeredness about it. I mean, I'm very passionate about the value of vaccination and the protection, not just in the context of COVID, but in the context of many viral and bacterial infections, flu being another example. And, you know, whether the unvaccinated like to hear it or not, they're enjoying freedoms because everybody else has taken the vaccine. And, you know, they need to be, you know, reminded of that, and they need to be advised that they will be socially excluded, except from the necessities of life, such as food and maybe hospitalisation or access to hospital. You know, because when they come in, you know, 2/3 of individuals in ICU are unvaccinated. And they're denying or delaying care for other individuals because they've chosen not to get this very efficacious and very safe vaccine.
One person made a comment to me on the programme yesterday and said, I can't get into a hospital to visit now without proof of being vaccinated. Yet the person preventing me from entering the hospital might not be vaccinated at all.
Correct, absolutely correct. And so with regard to social engagement as well, like, you know, everybody above 12 can be vaccinated. Now, 12 to 15s need parental consent or guardian consent. You know, another mechanism would be, you know, remove that under 18 don't need to show the vaccine card. Everybody over 12, if they're going out for a family dinner and the family have chosen not to get some members of their family vaccinated, well, then they can't go into the restaurant or they can't go into the, you know, the afternoon session that might be in a hotel or something. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think we need a level of social disapproval.
It needs more than that, Liam. The fact of the matter is, you can apply this. I don't want to kill this interview with analogies and stuff like that. You can apply it to every aspect, and I'm talking about myself, not you. You can apply this to any aspect of Irish life. You know, if I go to a GAA club and I say, I want to play football with you, but I'm not going to handle the ball. Well, lads, you're not coming in. It's like that. You can't be a member. Yeah. If I go to a soccer club and say, lads, I want to join the club and I'm going to handle the ball every time it comes to me, you can't come in. If I want to get a driving test, if I want to drive a car, I have to get a driving test. If I say I don't agree with driving tests, then go away. So what at this stage, the decision surely for the government is to lay down clarity in this and to stop letting the tail wag the dog, or is that overdoing the metaphor?
Well, apart from that's a very rich delivery of metaphors, the sentiment is quite correct, Clem. You know, I think we need, you know, we have been a very cooperative society with regard to all the restrictions, taking this new medicine, protecting ourselves and protecting others. And, you know, these numbers that are being talked about, Clem, I mean, it's not so much the numbers, it's the fact that we have a hospital system that can't cope. You know, if we had a hospital system that was only working at 80% capacity, then the 70 beds that are in ICU wouldn't be an issue. And likewise, if there, we were only dealing with the ill-vaccinated in hospital, we would have about 25 ICU beds occupied. The others would be free for, you know, other healthcare needs and people who need them. So, I mean, you know, there has to be a level of government action to make it really difficult for people to say, you know, well, I'm not vaccinated, I'm going to stay that way. Well, then actually, the consequences are, because you've chosen not to take this very efficacious medicine to protect yourselves and others, you're not going to be engaged in all of the following. And, you know, the vaccine is still freely available. So anybody who hasn't got the vaccine, there aren't any impediments to getting it. And remember, Clem, we have a flu season coming up. We're in it. We're at the start of it. And there's a very effective vaccine for that, which will shorten the duration of your illness. So, you know, we don't want complicated symptoms, you know, of flu and COVID-19 coming together, because everybody will have to step away from wherever they're engaged in, or the workforce, if they start to show any of the 11 symptoms associated with COVID-19, and get a test.
Well, on according to Minister Stephen Donnelly, he has a plethora of reasons why things are going the way they are. He says unvaccinated people are placing a disproportionate burden on the health service. He also says that our proximity to the United Kingdom is an issue as well, in terms of open travel between the countries. No matter what it is anyway, and I mean, we have to put into the mix as well that vaccinated people are also getting infected again. But as you pointed out, the real benefit of vaccination is you will not be seriously ill if you have been vaccinated.
Could I just interrupt and just say, like, so because there's a large number of unvaccinated acquiring this infection, breakthrough infections in vaccinated people is going to be larger. So, you know, I mean, so, you know, you mentioned about the tail wagging the dog. If we can just bring them on board and say, please come and get vaccinated, don't bring this COVID-19 infection with these numbers into the Christmas period. We lost Christmas last year, you know, essentially, and the many months, and friends and individuals to COVID-19, some people did, as a result of high numbers. Now, we're not going to go back to those very high numbers. I genuinely don't believe that. But we are going to have a health system that can't cope. We have it, actually, that it can't cope because of all the respiratory illnesses that normally come when we move indoors. And COVID-19 is
so
an infection.
So, Professor Liam Fanning, if you're the Taoiseach, and if you're running the cabinet in there, would you relax the restrictions on December 27th with the one proviso that the presentation of COVID certs, vaccination certs, will continue? Would you open up the economy completely?
I would, because look, but the other thing, Clem, is we haven't discussed is antigen testing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wouldn't just give it a minor dimension of kind of open up everything, have the vaccine certs. Use antigen tests. They're used in Europe. And the difference between antigen tests and PCR is antigen tests will give you an answer fairly quickly and tell you if that person is likely to be at a stage of their infection where they can transmit the virus. Remember, PCR just tells you whether you have the presence of the virus, yes or no. It doesn't give you how much of it. Well, sorry, the results that we get don't tell you. It is there in the information in the background, but we're not told that. So it's just like, so someone who has tiny amounts of the virus who's not infectious gets the same result as somebody who is highly infectious.
Okay, and taking both, predicating the decision on both those aspects, COVID certs continue to be presented and antigen testing
free antigen tests.
Or release all the restrictions.
Yes, I think so. Like, you know, for the vaccinated,
yes. Okay. I think the point is well made that, you know, a small minority who have a perfect right to refuse vaccines.
They do.
But that decision should not trump the public health issue for the rest of the population. On that particular note, Professor of Professor of Immunovirology at University College Cork, Professor Liam Fanning. Thanks a million again, Liam, for your time.
Good morning.
And good morning to you, and have a good weekend indeed. There you have it, folks, in regards to that. Now, let's turn our attention to what's going on with the water situation, because a recent report, we are aware of problems. There were 52 confirmed illnesses after contaminated water entered the public drinking supply. Here in Kildare, and the Greater Dublin area and in Wexford recently. A recent report has commented that about the abject failure of oversight leading to issues at water plants that resulted in the 52 falling ill. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, told an Oireachtas committee that incidents at water plants leading to that, and I quote, were an abject failure of managerial oversight, operational control and responsiveness by Irish Water and the local authorities overseeing those sites. One of those local authorities would be, of course, Dublin County Council. I wonder, is Kildare County Council involved in that as well? Let's find out more. Senior Inspector with the EPA is Dr. Michelle Moynihan. Good morning, Michelle, again.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. Now, you said it was also a failure by these bodies to fulfil their roles, to deliver safe and secure drinking water for their local areas.
That's correct, Clem. Irish Water is the water supplier with direct responsibility for the provision of a safe and secure supply of drinking water. And as most people will be aware, the water treatment plants are operated by individual local authorities across the country under a service level agreement with Irish Water. Now, our audits of Ballymore, Eustace and Gorey that followed the incidents that were reported to the agency quite late found a number of issues there and failings, notably mechanical issues at the plant, particularly Ballymore Eustace, that were addressed at the time, went unreported to Irish Water. They weren't escalated appropriately within Dublin City Council. Irish Water and the HSE and EPA weren't notified in time. That late notification prevented the HSE and Irish Water having a consultation that would have allowed a boil water notice to be put in place for the 877,000 consumers served by Ballymore Eustace, and that would have allowed for protection of public health while the inadequately treated water remained in the system for a period of 4 to 5 days.
What, you know, it's very damning what's gone on here, because your report says, in particular, the failure to consult with the HSE as to the risk to public health during the incidents meant there was no opportunity, as you just said, to issue boil water notices. There were 900,000 people in total across the Greater Dublin area, including Kildare and down in Wexford as well, which would have served to protect public health until issues at the plants were resolved. Now, the common issues identified by your organisation: a basic lack of awareness and understanding among operational and management staff at the significance of the incidents, a lack of awareness of the requirement to communicate these to Irish Water, an opportunity to assess the need for a boil water notice, a lack of critical alarm settings to inform operators of deteriorating water quality, no documented alarm or incident response procedures, no automatic shutdown of the plant in the event that critical alarms are activated. How can this happen, Michelle?
Yeah, so these are very significant findings, and we've identified a lot of common issues between both Gorey and Ballymore Eustace. Look, it's not acceptable that the local authorities involved were not aware that they needed, that they are understood the that the operational and management issues caused by the various different failures at the plant, nor is it acceptable that they lacked the awareness to be able to recognise that that might have compromised water quality and that they needed to escalate it within their own local authority and to Irish Water to ensure that that timely communication happened, that if a boil water notice was necessary, that it could have been put in place. And I suppose, look, boil water notices are inconvenient for people, and we've all seen them across the country, but they are a very necessary measure sometimes to protect public health for a short period of time to ensure that the plant can return to satisfactory operation and produce safe water again. And the way the mechanisms in place at the plant, you know, the processes and procedures, the critical alarms, those are the various strands that need to be in place to ensure that when something does go wrong at the plant, and, you know, equipment can fail, or a person can make a mistake, but what allows you to respond to that is that you have these critical alarms in place, that they're responded to, that they're escalated within the local authority structure, within and then to Irish Water.
But there seems, Michelle, to have been a failure across. It's one thing, we all make mistakes, nobody's perfect. Yeah. But the range of failures here at the most fundamental levels of, you know, communication, of operational matters, of managerial procedures, to deal with as an issue that could have had devastating impact. We know quite a few people allegedly became seriously ill, particularly down Wexford Way, in regards to this incidence of people being seriously ill as a regard of it. And what reassurance is there for consumers, not just in these two areas that were under discussion, but your statement to the committee, the EPA statement to the committee, the Health Oireachtas Committee, says, unfortunately, these incidents are not isolated and have been evident in other audits conducted in other parts of the country. So what reassurance? I thought Irish Water was set up to ensure we'd get all decent quality at long last, and yet we still find this kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, so you're right. Our reports, our statement to the John Oireachtas Committee yesterday called out the abject failures involved in Irish Water's failings in managerial oversight, and then the individual local authorities' failings involved. But I suppose on foot of those two audits and the findings of them, we undertook a number of immediate actions and instructed Irish Water to audit all their plants.
And have they done that?
Yeah, they started with the top 20 plants, and those have been completed. By top 20 plants, I mean by population served. So the likes of Ballymore, Eustis and Leixlip would be particularly familiar to your listeners. But they've audited those to ensure that critical alarm settings are in place, that they understand what the risks are. We asked them to undertake training of all staff in the areas of incident recognition and incident reporting, so that the staff on the ground understand what constitutes an incident and how they should deal with it, and that they have the procedure in place to be able to tell them what to do when it happens.
And isn't it reasonable to assume, Michelle, that one would have assumed in the first that these measures you're talking about are so fundamental to the operation of the water system in this country that you would be taking it as a given that these basic, not exceptional things, these basic measures are already undertaken and trained and upskilled for?
Yeah, I suppose there is a level of training and procedures in place, but our audits found they weren't sufficient, and they didn't capture what staff on the ground needed to be aware of. That has happened now, that awareness training on incident reporting and incident escalation, the proper procedures have been put in place across all plants. That training on incident awareness and reporting has been cascaded out to all local authorities, not just for Ballymore Eustis plant and Gorey plant, but to all plants across all local authorities. And Irish Water have undertaken that within the 4 to 5 weeks that have passed since these incidents came to light. So that is a level of reassurance. That we've also asked to make sure that the settings for critical alarms at the plants and shutdowns are put in place, and if necessary, that ultimate fail-safe of having the plant shut down if a critical alarm isn't responded to as well. That should give a level of certainty that if, for example, something was not responded to in time or not recognised in time, well, then the plant will shut down and unsafe water will not enter into supply.
All right. Well, very concerning that such basic stuff would have been missed or found wanting in the first place, but hopefully that's all addressed now and there is a greater awareness in regards to that. Dr. Michelle Moynihan is Senior Inspector with the Office of Environmental Enforcement, the EPA, on those audits being carried out after those serious breaches in Kildare, at Ballymore Eustis and in Wexford, which happened, by the way, only in late August. Michelle, thanks again.
And
very good morning. Enjoy your weekend. Right, what else have we got for you? Ah, yeah, Mrs. Cooper, Mammy Cooper in a tie. So it wasn't the 27th birthday of Kieran. It's his 17th birthday. I was thinking, actually, when I saw the 27 years old, that Mammy Cooper must be a lot older than she looks. Clem, I'm a vaccinated young girl. I work with... that's the one I was going to look at that earlier on. Okay. Clem, I find it astonishing that a booster campaign for everyone 65 and older and people in high-risk groups has not been planned by the National Immunisation Committee. The data is clear now from Israel that immunity wanes after 6 months and that a booster injection is needed and is effective, as COVID rates have dropped there significantly. Now, that's quite a long message, but the point you're making... Yeah, I'm intrigued by the fact that the booster campaign is planned for those in the much, much older cohort, and for over 65s, those who would have underlying conditions or are living permanently in care settings. Yeah, I think there's a very strong argument for giving it to the entire population. More messages on the way.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, let's go to the Naas Municipal District then, and joining me on the line is Labour Councillor Anne Breen. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Owen.
Motions that you brought forward to the recent meeting then, and just to quickly touch on a point that we just spoke about with Dr. Michelle Moynihan, because you asked Kildare County Council to inform members on how safe the drinking water is in the Naas Municipal District. Be interested to see what response you got from Kildare County Council, Anne.
Yes, I've asked this question because I got a lot of questions and emails from people whenever it happened in the Ballymore plant. And people asked me, how safe is the water? And I've asked this question. I've asked, how often is it tested? I didn't get an answer for that. But I have written to Irish Water and I've written to the HSE, and I'm waiting on a report from them. And as soon as I get a report from them, I will let you know on. I think the water should be tested regular, because a few years ago, I would say we had a big problem with water contaminated in Naas, and a lot of people got sick. And this is what I think the people were worried about, that is it going to be the same thing happening again? So that is the reason why I put this on the agenda for our Tuesday meeting.
Okay, you also had a question, Anne, wanting the council to confirm what action can be taken with regards to e-scooters and bicycles using the footpaths in the Naas Municipal District.
Yes, there is a problem with e-scooters and bicycles on the footpath. And so far, it hasn't been reenacted that there is a bill there, but, you know, saying that there should be no scooters. It is illegal to have no scooters and no bicycles on the footpath. But so far, it hasn't been enacted. It's illegal for scooters and public footpaths. But this is a Garda problem, and when is the Garda going to enforce it? It's going back now to the guards. But when are they going to enforce it? This problem.
Okay, and on that point as well, on footpaths, finally, Anne, you had a motion about the Salins Link Road, and you wanted the council to investigate the occurrence of parking on the footpath and roadside. That's just down at Millbank there in the estate,
right,
where Salins Celtic is.
Yeah, you know the area, Owen. You live in that area.
Yeah.
And my granddaughter has informed me this morning. She's a coach with Celtic, Salins Celtic, and she's informed me this morning that they have provided to a landlord, and he's given him permission and he's given him the key to use an alternative parking. So people should park in that alternative parking. I think there's about 25 car parking spaces, and she has informed me this morning that that's good news. She's got the key, and that's what she does, underage coaching for Salins Celtic.
Great stuff. Well, on that positive news and good news story, that is Labour Councillor Anne Breen with the motions brought forward to the recent Naas Municipal District. Thanks, Anne, and good morning.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you.
Now, the Social Democrat co-leader Catherine Murphy joins me this morning. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
Catherine, just to begin, the over-the-counter face-to-face banking at the Leakslip AIB branch on the main street in the town, it's no longer available. And that obviously comes from last Friday's closure of the Bank of Ireland at the Leakslip HP Intel campus.
Yeah, well, actually, it's the main street as well. It's the HP and Intel campus would be an offshoot of that, but it's the actual branch as well that closed. So essentially, there is no over-the-counter cash service available in the town. Well, there won't be once the date for withdrawing that service happens, and that's 22nd of November. Clane will be the other Kildare branch that will lose that service, and that's from the 15th of November. Now, I've had people on to me upset at that. That this is happening, you know, mm-hmm. and the feeling that, you know, the banks were bailed out, and, you know, that the customers are only welcome for certain transactions now. And essentially, I asked a parliamentary question. I wrote to AIB on foot of complaints from constituents. And essentially what I will be doing now is I'll be writing to the Central Bank, having had replies from both AIB and the a reply to a parliamentary question, which didn't differ an awful lot from the bank's reply. But, you know, obviously the state is a significant shareholder still in AIB.
Yes.
What I'll be doing now is I'll be looking to see if the bank, I'll be writing to the Central Bank to see if AIB undertook any community impact analysis. Like, for example, in leaks, the loss of those two, you know, the activity around those two banks, the closure of Bank of Ireland and the loss of the over-the-counter cash service, may well, you know, withdraw even more footfall from the village itself. And
and back in July, just that you're mentioning footfall, Catherine, AIB did announce that they were to close 15 branches. Now, none of which during that announcement were in County Kildare. But I assume with this strategic review, they are looking at all branches, and they're noticing, I would assume from what they've said in terms of the strategic review, that there's been a lack of footfall in Leixlip.
Yeah, like, but having said that, and I've experienced, I mean, I use online banking myself, mm-hmm. Like, you know, that would be the main...
But we know lots of people don't have the ability, yes.
But I've had experience of going into the bank, and I know others have, where you go to the counter and they direct you to a machine. The thing about it is then, when they look at the stats in relation to people opting to, go for an automated banking, that has been something that the bank has very much directed people towards. Now, most people would probably be very comfortable with that, but there will be a cohort of people, and particularly older people, who... you know, have done things in a traditional way, maybe won't be as comfortable doing things digitally or online. And essentially, they're the people who are, complaining to me anyway in relation to the loss of the over-the-counter service. They don't feel that pointing them in the direction of an agreement that they've made with Anpost is a substitute for the bank that they had.
Okay, and Catherine, and if you could just reiterate what you were mentioning there about Clane's AIB.
Yeah, Clane is included in the loss of the over-the-counter. It's one of 17 branches that this announcement was issued there about a month ago. And Clane will be losing the cash, the over-the-counter cash service as well. There's a knock-on consequence. Like, if you have less activity around our villages and towns where people are not going to, do their banking and that in person, what happens is you lose the kind of activity that is generated to other businesses.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Because people don't have a reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of almost a circular negative in this. And that is another aspect of this.
Yes.
But the feeling that, the feeling that there is a loss of service is the one that I've mainly had complaints
absolutely,
about.
Absolutely. And Clem earlier this week was speaking to three different areas of the county, their representatives, on the four branches closing of Bank of Ireland in this county. As you're mentioning, the same thing they mentioned, the impact it will have on the whole community. But Catherine Murphy, the Social Democrat co-leader and TD for Kildare North, thanks for the time this morning.
Yeah, indeed. And that's the first I've heard of Clane actually losing over-counter the services. So Leixlip gone, the Intel branch there being taken out as well. We've heard from Selbridge, Kilcullen, and where else? What was the other fourth area? There's Monasterevin as well during the week. And as Catherine says, implications far beyond just closing the bank and the lack of services. It's the impact on the general economy in each area as well.